Welcome, everyone. Thanks for being with me this next hour. You are listening to A Course in Miracles with C.A. Brooks, asking the question, why wait for heaven? On 1-2 Radio, changing the way we experience life and spirituality. Today is February 13th, 2015. Today on A Course in Miracles, I'm excited to welcome back author Susan Dugan. Susan is preparing for an all-day workshop focusing on parent-child relationships, and when we discussed the topic for today's show, she said she's heavily immersed in the topic of special relationships, and she's feeling very drawn to workbook lesson 153, which is, In My Defenselessness, My Safety Lies. And that sounded like a really good and very timely topic to me as well. So that's what we're going to be talking about. So pull out your ACIM workbook for students, and you can follow along with us as we discuss special relationships. A very special topic indeed. And as you're listening to the show today, I invite you to join us in the 1-2 Radio chat room on Facebook. One of the easiest ways to get there is to go to the 1-2radio.com website. And on that left side of the page, you will see a link that says chat. So just go ahead and click that, and you will be automatically redirected to our private group on Facebook. And if you're not already a member, just hit the join button and come on in. So my guest, Susan, many of you know this, she comes back once a month, but she is the author of two books based on A Course in Miracles, Extraordinary Ordinary Forgiveness, and Forgiveness Offers Everything I Want, which are just astounding books, and I'm hoping there's a new one in the offering somewhere in the near future. She's also the co-founder of the School of Reason for A Course in Miracles, and she facilitates ACIM study groups in Denver, Colorado. Welcome, Susan.
Thank you, C.A. Thanks for your very generous little plug there.
Well, it is. And I'm loving that you're doing that workshop. And I especially want you, towards the end of the show, we can certainly talk about that and what you're going to cover in that workshop. And I will tell you, though, I think this topic is perfect, this lesson 153, because when I have actually been debating back and forth about whether or not to take your workshop. And here's the reason why. Because it seems like it's kind of a vulnerable topic. And there's part of me that goes, I don't know if I want to go there, you know?
Yes.
And
yeah.
I mean, that's exactly it. It's not that I don't want to go, but it seems, I just feel kind of vulnerable. And I'm wondering if I can really handle it, you know? And it's kind of funny because Doug Sparks was on the show last week. And one of the things he was talking about, which I think applies here, is he said, you know, you practice with the stuff that doesn't have so much emotional content. You know, practice with the stuff that doesn't get you going so much. And then you learn to then generalize that to other areas of your life. And I kind of jumped ahead and I thought, and that's exactly it. Talking about the parent and child relationship, that one is just loaded for me emotionally.
Oh, I think it's loaded for all of us
so
emotionally. I mean, really, that's one reason. I you know, it's funny that you should say that you felt so vulnerable, because I was approached to give this workshop on the parent-child relationship by someone in Portland, Oregon, a very nice person who just contacted me. And I had that same, in a sense, reaction. Well, first of all, I'm not used to like leaving the state, you know, getting on an airplane to like actually go somewhere and actually like talk to strangers, you know?
Uh-huh.
So that's not my natural proclivity with this at all. But it was really that, I think, that vulnerability that you're talking about, even though I spill my guts constantly on my blog. You
know? That's different, though.
Well, yeah, that's in the privacy of my own home. And I forget that anybody's actually reading it, you know. And so, but it is that, it is such a vulnerable topic. But I think that that's why it's such a rich classroom for us, because such a, you know, it has such potential for deep healing, because it's our longest and our first experience with the special relationship, you know.
Mm-hmm.
and that's why we feel so vulnerable, you know, because so much of our identity is just, you know, our personal identity that we think we are, that we're defending, which we'll be talking about in workbook lesson 153 soon, is all about, you know, my special story. And when does our special story begin? Well, it begins with our parents. And then when we become, if we become parents, you know, we're usually still trying to balance in some way with our own children that special story, you know, and somehow rewrite the past. And of course we're doing that all our lives with our own parents. You know, we're trying to somehow make the rights that we feel were wronged in the past somehow right. And you know, it's really only, I mean, the course is really teaching us a whole new way of approaching our relationships. And as you said, it generally, we start with the smaller things, as you know, the how reactive we are in traffic, and you know, enters with this. That's what we start with. And for me, another thing that I started with was my political. You know, I was such a knee-jerk, politically reactive person, and so watching the news was a huge classroom for me for so many years. And you know, I really felt so self-righteous. And I can say that that has been transformed for me through this practice, you know, where I really can drop that reactivity very, very quickly because I see what I'm doing. I really see that we're the same in this, you know, even though I still have my opinions, I see that that everybody's fighting the hard battle of trying to you know, compete for innocence and by their point of view, you know, and even if it's something that I completely disagree with, the motivation is the same. Mm-hmm. So I can see it in that arena, but it's the arena that, you know, that is closest to my own body, my own sense of identity. It's those special relationships that are so difficult for us, you know? And anyway, we can talk about the workshop at the end, but I, you know, what I'm hoping in this workshop is to create a safe space in which for us to really look at what the course says about that. And you know, the gentleness of this course, of Jesus as our teacher, is really the safety that, you know, we're through we can't do it alone, but when we join with our inner teacher and really are willing to look, you know, we really see that this terrible vulnerability that we all feel, that right behind it is the invulnerable love that we're searching so desperately for. And it's like we can't get to that love until we you know, safely approach the vulnerability with our teacher, and are willing to you know, look at it a little differently, a lot differently, actually. But yeah, you know, so I mean, and we can, you know, move on to this lesson, which really is, I mean, what that's about, the vulnerability. Is you know, this lesson is in my defenselessness, my safety lies, and I was telling you before we got started and you know, recording, that another reason that I wanted to look at this lesson today was just that I was noticing so much in myself how, you know, I was back in that state of feeling sort of victimized by this constant barrage of seeming outside forces that, you know, that just seem hard to wrap your head around, that, you know, it seems like the world is one damn thing
after another.
Right. And so, and, you know, on the personal level, on the collective level, on the, you know, on the very, you know, the trivial level, on the catastrophic level. And so, you know, to see that we just almost feel at times, I do, that we can't even catch our breath. It's like, then, you know, before we've even figured out, you know, we're beginning to react to one problem, and then there's another and another and another, and you know, we completely forget that that's the purpose of the world.
It's right.
Completely mindless and so busy trying to defend ourselves from what seem like this constant barrage of outside attacks, you know, this video game of asteroids that's just like pummeling us all the time. And that really, you know, but everything in our dream is me, you know, everything, all of that is my defense against that love, you know, and can be seen differently if I go back, if I'm willing to take that risk of going back to the mind and saying, you know, I can't do this by myself, but I really want to see this differently. I want to return to that quiet center and look at my true strength and my true safety. And you know, when we're willing to do that, and it's our vulnerability that drives us there eventually, because it's so painful, you know?
Yeah. Well, and if you don't mind, I'm going to read a few lines from this lesson, because it's exactly what you're saying. And it says, "It's as if a circle held it fast, wherein another circle bounded and another one in that, until escape no longer can be hoped for nor obtained. Attack, defense, defense, attack becomes the circles of the hours of the days that bind the mind in heavy bands of steel with iron overlaid, returning but to start again. There seems to be no break nor ending in the ever-tightening grip of the imprisonment upon the mind."
Right.
And that's exactly, I mean, you know, just like you said, I mean, especially what's been in the news lately, that's exactly what it feels like to me. Like, there just is no escape, you know. And you said it before we started the show, you said something about this world was a bad idea.
Yeah.
It is. It's like, that's just bad what I'm idea. Feeling. It's a bad idea.
And it was made to be a bad idea. You know, it's based on the tiny mad idea that we could be separate from all we ever wanted, you know, from the seamless union, eternal union of our, you know, in completely invulnerable and endlessly supported nature and loving nature. And so, you know, if we make something, if we believe that there can be an opposite to that, that's a bad idea. You know, it's an
yeah.
idea too, but it's a hateful. I mean, it's you know, it doesn't. It comes from the selfish belief that we could make something better than perfection. You know, and of course we can't. And so, you know, the guilt over and then a part of us knows that, and so the guilt over believing that we actually did accomplish this separation, you know, spins out into this entire universe of projected forms in which we duke it out. And what we're duking it out for is it's a competition for our innocence. You know, we are in competition with everyone and everything from the moment we seem to be conscious in this world, from the time we draw our first breath, and probably before that in the womb, you know, because our decision to come here is a bad idea.
Yeah.
So, you know, our whole agenda, everybody's agenda is to prove I exist, but it's not my fault. It's somebody, it's theirs. And how do we, you know, the best way to prove that is to have this constant, a barrage of incoming attacks, which seem to be the problem, which keep us completely mindless. And from, you know, our vow to the ego was never go back to the mind, because if we go back to the mind, you know, God will strike us blind and punish us for doing this. Well, we didn't do it. We never left the mind. So in truth, if we go back to the mind where we already are, we'll see that it's silly. We'll see that all we're really looking for is love, and that there's nothing to defend. You know, that love is completely intact and includes everyone. You know, it turns out nobody's guilty here. Despite, the elaborate illusions that we've created, that certainly testify otherwise.
Right.
And, you know, but so in practice, I mean, we can't wrap our heads around that in the condition we think we're in, but in practice, we can question our defensiveness. You know, every time we find ourselves, you know, that call to judgment, that rush to anger that we all feel, it feels so justified and it feels so good. You know, I mean, the negativity of it is we're not in touch with that, the fact that we actually crave that.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, so when we're finding ourselves feeling that, you know, that terrible anxiety of reactivity in whatever form, and it seems to be because of what someone did now, someone in my personal life did right now to me, or someone from the past that I'm thinking about, you know, if we're thinking about the parent-child relationship, or something that I must fix or change about someone I love, which is, you know, also inherent in our special relationships, that terrible, you know, neediness that we have to take care of this problem. You know, that's our call to say, you know what, there's there's another way. And you know, there's a part of me, the true part of me within the mind is completely defenseless. The Christ in us is very still, you know, and merely looks and waits and judges not. And that loving defenselessness that is just smiling patiently and waiting gently for us to, you know, to put down our toys, as this lesson says.
Right.
is right there behind those illusions that we could almost poke our hand through. Look, they're so insubstantial, but it's, you know, it doesn't feel that way. But if we look at it, if we go back to the mind, if we're willing to, you know, drop it, to just say, you know, I'm wrong. There has to be something else going on here. And I want to see it because this is too painful. And that's what drives us back to the mind. And you know, to just drop having it our way and return to that, even when we don't know it's there, just trust that there is a part of us that, you know, a gentle part of us, a defenseless part of us that we can join with, and just be willing to see what happens, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Well, and like in what this lesson tells us, which I always think is, you know, in some ways, this is waking up to the truth because we all know it on some experiential level, but our defensiveness actually just promotes our weakness. Like in one of the paragraphs, it says, for it attests to weakness and sets up a system of defense that cannot work. And that's it. You know, we're kind of steeped in this idea of a strong defense is the best offense.
Oh, yes.
And or the best offense is the best defense. I don't know which way it goes, but the idea is that those defenses actually just keep reiterating and reinforcing in our own mind how weak we are or how weak we feel.
Yes.
They don't make us feel stronger. They make us feel weaker.
They make us act exactly. We're anxious all the time because, you know, I mean, on some level, deeply buried in our mind, we know this can't work.
Yeah.
It hasn't worked. And so we're, you know, we're just constantly using all of our energy, fighting to defend a lie. You know,
yeah,
I mean, the real lie that, you know, the real lie that we're defending is the lie of me and you,
mm-hmm.
and the separate interests we think we have, you know, or my need to get something from you, you know, when we have it, we all have it. So it's that's exhausting.
It is.
This says you're a slave, you know, it says, defenselessness is strength. It testifies to recognition of the Christ in you. And then he says, perhaps you will recall the text maintains that choice is always made between Christ's strength and your own weakness. Seen apart from him, defenselessness can never be attacked because it recognizes strength. So great, attack is folly or a silly game a tired child might play when he becomes too sleepy to remember what he wants. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost as if our very choice for this experiment in individuality was a silly game that children play, you know.
Uh-huh.
We'd forgotten what we want, you know, and we're just spinning this out again and again, playing this game with our plastic swords,
yeah.
You know, and our little fortresses, you know, their little sheets strung over the couch and stuff. That's what my brother and I used to do, you know, each other from separate sides of the room. But, you know, that's what we're doing. And, you know, but it doesn't feel like that. And so, you know, I mean, actually getting in, just admitting how vulnerable we feel to Jesus, you know, to this part of our mind, to our teacher, that's really part of this. That's so essential to this journey, you know, looking at it. And saying, you know, this is really hurting me. There has to be a better way, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, and one of the lines in this lesson too says, the mind is now so confused and knows not where to turn to find escape from its imaginings.
Right.
And see, I love that because that's exactly how it feels. Like you said, we go round and round and round and we're confused, but we're not trying to escape from something real. We're trying to escape from our own imaginings.
Right.
And we don't know how.
Right. We're terrified. Well, we don't know we have a mind.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't trust anything out there. You know, I mean, we're defending ourselves from everyone, even the ones that we profess to love the most. we're probably the most scared of.
Right. Right.
Right. Because we know that, you know, we're playing this game with them that's to the death, right? For our, you know, again, to get love that we think we lost, and then to hold them responsible for not giving it to us.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, we're under constant stress, and we can't get to that, you know, to that love. So, I mean, the Course itself is giving us the tools, is giving us the map back to the mind. And it comes with a built-in teacher. It comes with you know, the steps of forgiveness, a teaching, a function for us, a new function. It tells us to change the purpose of our lives from this prison in which we're enslaved. We seem to be enslaved by our illusions and all our problems, to a classroom in which we use those very, you know, problems to bring, you know, that is becomes our curriculum that we bring back to look at with our new teacher. And one by one, as those illusions seem to be upsetting us, you know, as we find ourselves feeling that vulnerability in this relationship, in this news story, in this, you know, whatever the problem seems, whatever's happening in my body, whatever's coming up for us, you know, that's our opportunity to you know, let go of something we don't even know is there, this guilt that we keep defending.
Mm-hmm.
And that's being undone for us. But, you know, our part is to watch that reactiveness, watch that defensiveness, watch that, you know, when we're feeling that, to stop, to try to stop ourselves, and not from feeling it, feeling what we're feeling, but you know, questioning it, saying, there has to be something else going on here. I'm not upset for the reason I think, as lesson five says, and I could see peace instead of this. There's a part, there's a teacher that can help me look at this differently. And, you know, even when we may not feel that, we may not have that sense of that presence, but that's really when we need it most. That's when we need to just kind of sit with our fear of this and just say, you know, I'm learning that there's, you know, I don't right now, I'm too afraid to choose that love, but I know I'm learning too that there is another way. And I've had glimpses of that love. This practice does give us those instances when our neediness and our personal interests, our personal sense of self falls away. And we really do see that everybody is fighting the same hard battle. You know, the reactivity drops off and we see that this other person is just like me, or this other, you know, everybody, the victims and the victimizers are coming from the same fear.
Right.
You know? And that, I mean, that does happen through this practice. And you know, but just because it's not happening doesn't mean we're not feeling it right now. Doesn't mean that we're doing anything wrong. You know, we have to have a healthy respect for our extremely unconscious resistance to this, because you know, again, we're terrified that what would I be without this special story? That's all I remember. You know, part of the ego's strategy was to make up this whole thing and then forget we made it up.
Right. And where would we be without it?
Right. We don't know. And of course, we're going to be terrified. So until we're at the, you know, end of the journey, the top of the ladder, we're not going to be completely sure about this, because our mind is still split. The ego hangs on until the very end. But along the way, we will have more experiences of this, of defenselessness. And we'll be learning that, you know, that my way is hurting me. And you know, this other way that is not my plan, you know, it is going to be my ticket home.
Yeah. Well, and here I'd like to read a couple more lines from this lesson.
Yeah.
Defenses are the costliest of all the prices which the ego would exact. In them lies madness, in a form so grim that hope of sanity seems but to be an idle dream, beyond the possible. The sense of threat the world encourages is so much deeper and so far beyond the frenzy and intensity of which you can conceive that you have no idea of all the devastation it has wrought. And now I'm jumping a few sentences, but you do not understand how much you have been made to sacrifice.
who feel its iron grip upon your heart.
Yeah, yeah.
Right, because we don't, you know, again, we think that everything, we look to form. You know, we look to bodies for everything. That's our only reality, our only memory. You know, I mean, we have another memory, but it's buried in our mind. And so, you know, we're not aware that all of this is an elaborate smokescreen for the original thought of desolation that we separated from God and can never find our way home. I mean, every problem from the Course's perspective is the same.
It's the same problem. That's right. The same error.
Picture of an inward condition, you know? And so the solution to every problem is, you know, to look at this with our new teacher, one by illusion by illusion, feeling by feeling, because that's crucial. You know, this is about what am I feeling right now? And what does that say about which teacher I've chosen? And so looking, you know, if I'm feeling anything but kindly and peacefully toward others and myself, then I've chosen the ego as my teacher. And it's there, you know, I can't, that root will only bring me pain, as this lesson says, you know. You who feel threatened by this changing world, its twists of fortune and its bitter jests, its brief relationships and all the gifts it merely lends to take away again, attend this lesson well. The world provides no safety. It is rooted in attack, and all its, quote, gifts of seeming safety are illusory deceptions. I mean, that's pretty clear.
Yes.
You know, that was the purpose of the world. So, you know, we shouldn't feel guilty that we're feeling these things, because again, the world was a really bad idea.
Yeah.
And a maladaptive solution, as Ken said, to a non-existent problem, you know, and only looking at the solution as it is with our inner teacher, instead of the way I think I set it up, as the Course says, is that's the only solution. You know, that's the only way that will bring me peace. Nothing here will. Yeah. I mean, that doesn't mean I go poof. That doesn't mean I'm not here anymore. It's not, you know, it's again, it's not the ego looks at it all about, well, what does that mean for my body? It just means that we'll live here, you know, in a way that can be increasingly truly loving, increasingly truly generous without, you know, the name of my workshop is The Parent-Child Relationship Transcending Guilt, Blame, and Need, that we can transcend the guilt, blame, and need of our day-to-day interactions with others. You know, there's a way of living in this world that is embracing kindness toward all, which means we're embracing kindness to ourselves. You know, we finally feel loved. We finally feel loving because we're not placing that neediness on illusions that were made to take it away. You know?
Right, right. Well, and in fact, I was watching some videos on YouTube. And by the way, thank you. You sent me a link that was really good. So I was watching a bunch of videos on YouTube of Ken Wapnick speaking. And one of them was something about why people suicide or something like that. And I thought, okay, that seems like an odd topic. But of course, what he was really addressing, I mean, part of it was suicide, but it was just that idea that you think you can escape the world by leaving it. But the minute you really think you can escape the world by leaving it, you're making the world real all over again.
And the world is in the mind.
Yes.
It's not in the world. There's no mind in the world. You know, the brain is not the mind. Ideas leave not their source. So, you know, death is not an escape from this.
Exactly. Death is not an escape from this.
And that, you know, that which goes against so much of the New Age teachings. And so I remember hearing that from a teacher early on, pretty early on in encountering the Course about 11 years ago. And that was just really hard for me to accept because, you know, I'd been reading all these books about the white light and the wonderful, you know, the times in between lives, you know, all of the meaning of the various lives. And it just, you know, the Course just stops you in your tracks. You know, it's uncompromising in its non-duality, even though it meets us in a dualistic world and uses all this dualistic language, it's leading us to a place of true union, you know, and a love that has no opposite and that is never conditional. And that includes everyone. You know, in which there is no warring going on because there's no otherness.
Right. Well, and in fact, now that you say that, I want to bring up a point about this lesson too, because this is one of those ones that, I mean, of course, I'm not sure there's any lesson I don't really love, because right. they're all just so incredible. But this is one of the ones that, it's 153. So if you're going in order, you know, you've already been doing this for a few months, right? But you get to this lesson and it's a really long lesson, but it does what I think is really interesting as a teaching tool, which is it starts with all the really negative stuff. Your defenses don't work. You have no idea how powerful they are. You have no idea how they prove your weakness. And I think these are the kinds of things, if somebody quoted some of these things out of context and said, oh, that's the Course in Miracles, right. you'd go, oh, my God.
They probably commit suicide, right?
Yeah, right then. It's like, oh, my God. But what it does is it walks you down this path of, do you see how smelly this is? Do right. you realize what these defenses are costing you? You know, trust me on this. This is what these defenses do. And when he takes you kind of to the bottom and you're going, oh my God, then he's like, okay, these are childish games. And then he starts bringing you back sort of, you know, so to speak, to the surface of saying, you know, are we really going to compromise our happiness by going this way? Can we not just look at these dreams and look past them? So as you keep moving through the lesson, he cycles you right back to what you've been talking about, which is the mind.
Yes.
You know, be still a moment and in silence, think how holy is your purpose, how secure you rest, untouchable within its light. So these are some of the lessons though, that I really like, because I just think they need to take you there. You need to really realize, once again, what the cost is of playing with these dangerous games.
Right. That's exactly right. I mean, Jesus teaches through contrast. And so he's constantly, you know, as our teacher, you can't teach people who aren't motivated. So the way that he motivates us is to get us to look at what we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's constantly, you know, he says, together we will use, I'm paraphrasing this, but, you know, we have the lamp to dispel the darkness. So let's look at this with me. That's why there's so much emphasis on looking. Look at what you're doing. How are you feeling? How's this working out for you? You know, this is why the world was set up. Do you notice any like relationship to what I'm saying in your own personal life? You know, can you relate to some of the things I'm saying? Because, you know, like, look at what you did throughout your day. You know, look at how reactive you were and how persecuted you felt. And you know, so let's look at this. You know, there is another way. And he's constantly saying, you know, if you choose the ego as your teacher, if you choose to reinforce this bad idea of the world, and, you know, you're going to suffer. And then he gives us the program of forgiveness to practice in our lives so that we can begin to see to trust him, to see, well, you know what? He's right. Everything that I thought was their fault,
yeah.
it's really a choice in every moment. I have a mind, you know, and we begin to experiment with, well, I actually can choose to look at this differently. I have a different part of my mind that sees this differently. And then he contrasts it with, you know, the beautiful, and we can read this at the very end, but, you know, what the right mind is like, what it's leading us to, the defenselessness that we will feel when we're willing to put down these children's toys and you know, the relief and release that we'll feel, because it's so exhausting. You know, the Course says the world winds wearily on.
And, yes.
You know, it just keeps, you know, spinning these stories in more and more elaborate ways. And we have more and more, you know, ways to communicate the horrors of the world. And, you know, I mean, and as we may have temporary pleasures, especially when we're younger, but as life goes on, you know, the horrors of in our own lives pile up. They seem to. And, you know, we have a choice of, you know, not, the truth is that nothing has the power to take that quiet center away, the peace I am, the loving kindness that we really are away. That, you know, that is not, has nothing to do with bodies and nothing to do with the world of feuding bodies that are part of a really bad feuding idea, you know?
Yeah. Well, and I want to read this from this section too. And I don't know if this is the part you were thinking of, but I love, love, love this line. I always have. Salvation can be thought of as a game that happy children play.
Right.
It was designed by one who loves his children and who would replace their fearful toys with joyous games, which teach them that the game of fear is gone. His game instructs in happiness because there is no loser. Everyone who plays must win. And in his winning is the gain to everyone insured. The game of fear is gladly laid aside when children come to see the benefits salvation brings. But I'm going to say that first line one more time. Salvation can be thought of as a game that happy children play.
Right. And we're being led to, you know, to be in the direction of being, of having happy dreams, of being happy children. And the happy dream is not about what seems to be happening in form. It's about seeing that, you know, again, that I am loved and loving, that whatever is happening, you are loved and loving too. You know, that who knew that that everyone here is innocent.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're not on different sides. The victims and the victimizers are coming from the same scared place and have the same power in their mind to become happy children, you know? So we don't have to save people.
Right.
Go ahead.
Yeah, there's another line that says, for you will not see the light until you offer it to your brothers.
Right. It's all about the healing of my mind. And so when I am, you know, recognizing that the way I am experiencing, you know, the way I'm perceiving myself in this relationship as victimized is hurting me, then this is a call from my own call for love, my own call for healing my own mind, and an opportunity for me to do it, that is seeing, you know, that's choosing Jesus as my teacher. And the result of that is I see my brother differently. I see that we're the same. And I don't have that need, you know, going back to the idea of the parent-child relationship again, I don't have that need to, you know, while I still can act in my normal role, and do the things that, you know, if I'm a parent that I, you know, I may have to discipline my child or ground them, or, you know, you can be firmly authoritative as Jesus is with us in the Course without condemnation, without blame, without humiliating them, without needing them to reflect well on me, you know, without mm-hmm. any of the pressure that we put on our children, and with really honoring or our parents, you know, if we're thinking about our elderly parents or, you know, whatever in our relationship with our own parents, without our need for them to comply with our wishes, honoring the power of the other person's decision-making mind to choose, and recognizing that everybody here has their own atonement path that, you know, we don't even understand our own. And so, you know, in the greater scheme of things, where they are right now, however it looks, might be just perfect for their learning.
Uh-huh.
You know, just like where I am, even though it may seem like, you know, the Course tells us not to judge our own progress, where I am may be just perfect for my own learning too, even though it seems really difficult what I seem to be going through right now.
Right. Well, and in fact, I had an interesting experience a couple of weeks ago in which I was talking to a friend who is A Course in Miracles, and I was really, really upset about something. And I was really getting into my righteousness, as you can imagine. And, you know, I kept talking about, well, it's just crazy making, you know, and I just can't be part of this crazy making. And I don't remember his exact words, but the essence of what he basically said was, well, what makes you think that your illusion is any less crazy than theirs?
Yeah.
And that really took me right back to the idea that in the Course, you know, how often does Jesus tell us you are insane? Right. And so all of a sudden it really was like one of those aha moments,
right,
that I recognized I'm defending my illusion as if I'm not insane. And so he's right. What makes me think my illusion is any less insane than theirs?
Absolutely.
And it really stopped me. I mean, it really was an aha moment of, oh my gosh, I'm defending mine. It's like, yeah, this is the right illusion. You know, theirs is the wrong illusion. Mine is the right one. And all of a sudden it's like, I could just hear the Course going, yeah, but you're insane. you're equally insane.
Well, you know, I mean, the Course is really, really different in the way it looks at, you know, the way salvation of the world depends on me. You know, that lesson is really, it's about I'm taking 100% responsibility for my own mind. Everything that is coming up, all of my reactions are an invitation for the healing of my own mind. Everyone that seems to be out there has the same decision-making mind because we're one. We're, you know, we really are all fragments of the same whole mind. And so however it's presenting, we're wrong. We're wrong about what we think when we look to form.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we're wrong when we can't measure our own progress. We can't measure someone else's. And, you know, it's always my own mind in need of healing. And that's, the Course asks us to take 100% responsibility for my mind. That's taking responsibility for the world from the Course perspective. That's all.
But it's those levels, you know, it's that, you know, in fact, it was a few weeks ago, I was listening to something Ken was saying. And as long as you think there are levels, as long as you think one form is worse than another, or one form is better than another, then you're not getting it. You know,
so then we need a teacher. We can't do this by ourselves. That's why it's so, you know, the teacher of Jesus or the symbol, whatever symbol you want to use, Holy Spirit, but the, you know, for that part of our mind that remembered to laugh at the tiny mad idea and knows that nothing changed, nothing has happened to alter our, you know, one seamless union. We have to be cultivating that relationship with that part of our mind until we know we're not bodies. And that's only at the very top of the ladder. So cultivating a relationship with Jesus, being in contact throughout your day, all day long, whenever you're, you know, finding yourself feeling victimized and reactive and defensive and, you know, anxious, all of the things that we feel, you know, we have to, that's what forgiveness is to say, you know, something else is at work here and, you know, just question it. And I want to see peace instead. Please help me to see this differently. We need to go within to a part of our mind, you know, that's above the battleground, as the Course says.
Yeah.
And we need that, you know, and that, and I think it's going to feel, I always remind myself whenever it's feeling really hard. And, you know, I get, my ego does a little tantrums, hissy fits now and then about this is, I'm just never going to get this. There's not enough time in the program for me to make it home.
That's right.
The rate I'm going, you know, and to just, you know, when that stuff comes up to just, you know, there I go again. Okay. You know, so what else is new? Again, we have a healthy respect for our resistance, but you know, that's a lie. And even if I can't feel that, you know, Jesus is right there. That's a lie too. And, you know, I have to be patient with myself and try to be as gentle with myself as I can and just wait, you know, ride it out sometimes, but you will come back to that peace because, you know, as long as you're practicing, it's just practice, practice, practice and patience, 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 and purpose, purpose, purpose.
That's right. And in fact, when it comes to the Course or just to life in general, I love the word purpose.
Yes.
You know, that everything we do is on purpose. So we can choose one purpose or we can choose the other. You know, that's kind of what it comes down to, like choosing the two teachers. You're doing this on purpose. So don't see yourself as, oh, I had no idea. You're doing it on purpose. Right. Our defenses have a purpose.
Right. One will root us, you know, one teacher, choice for teacher will root us more deeply in the dream and eventually make it scarier and scarier and scarier. And you know, the other purpose will be to make my life a classroom and begin to see truly and eventually become kinder and more loving and, you know, return home.
Yeah.
We've talked a long time.
Well, and so what else? I want to make sure there's enough time for you to talk about your workshop. So what else about this particular lesson? Are there other comments that you want to make to summarize or, you know, what drew your attention to this particular lesson?
You know, I just think that, again, it's really that, I'm feeling, I don't think I understood the word defenselessness, and I don't think most of us do when we come to the Course. I mean, this lesson was sort of a mystery to me for a long time.
Uh-huh.
But I'm beginning to feel, to experience that kind of, you know, return to sanity that we have in which we really don't see separate interests. We really, that specialness drops away. And you know, when we really have moments where we can see that, you know, this is not about me. This is not my purpose really isn't to get, you know, my purpose used to be to always try to get my way. But my purpose now is really learning what I really am and healing my mind. And you know, so again, that shift to defenselessness is a result of this practice, is a result of choosing Jesus as our teacher and actually beginning to share his presence, his awareness. And you know, we shift from our way. It always starts with my way. And when I'm willing to take that and look at that more closely, and with, you know, I think I'm beginning to let go of some of my self-judgment, which has been, made it very difficult at times, then that, you know, that gentleness kind of emerges, and that gentleness is and not a need for me to have my way, you know,
mm-hmm.
It drops away. And, you know, there's, that's a really lovely experience. And it really is, you know, the completion and the love that we're seeking and never finding in this world of twisted dreams, as he was saying earlier. So, you know, this practice will bring us experiences of that. And it may take a while to experience it, but the practice definitely yields it in more and more different ways. And what it always reveals to me is I'm always wrong about what this is going to look like. So don't try to expect what it's going to look like. This is an experience, and it's not, we can't muscle our way through it. It will come to us as we're willing to step back and let Jesus, let God, let love lead the way.
Yes. Well, and you know what I'm thinking, of course, this is probably opening a whole can of worms for another show. But as you said, you know, letting go of having my way, because in the course so often we're reminded that our will really is God's will.
Right.
That when we wake up to that idea that what's really best for us, what is our will, what we ultimately want, is the same as God's will. And I'm thinking, what a nice contrast between getting my way,
right,
or recognizing what my will really is. Exactly. They're not the same thing.
No, but we think we made another will, you know?
Uh-huh.
And when that drops away through this practice, that's defenselessness. When we return to, there's no opposition, there's no other will, because it's not based on form. It doesn't matter what happens. It does, you know, my safety is guaranteed. And yeah. And so is yours. You know, there's a certainty, a complete certainty that we're not familiar at all with here in the world, that is really the truth in us. And you know, that's, oh, it's such a relief.
Yeah.
and it's such a, you know, I mean, all of the things don't have to turn out the way I think they should anymore. You know, it's okay. It's whatever, you know, you still have preferences, but, you know, what does that have to do with my peace?
Right.
That's our decision, you know? And that's, you know, that decision is which teacher am I choosing?
Mm-hmm.
And it's such a struggle when we're trying to do it our way.
Yeah. Well, and you had mentioned before we came on the air today that you had had a couple of moments in the last few weeks of just letting go of your defenses and just feeling that peace.
Yes, definitely. Well, I don't know if we still have time, but I can quickly share one.
Yeah, go ahead. I think we do.
The one that I that really brought it home to me was after many, many, you know, I was experiencing, I just wrote about this actually and posted it on my website. But you know, I was in that place again of, you know, it seemed like a constant barrage of things happening and really struggling, and had decided to do lesson 186, Salvation of the World Depends on Me, for I had to teach the Sunday gathering at the Rocky Mountain Miracle Center because we alternate teachers, but you know, I had been in a very up and down, tumultuous kind of state before that, and so I was really having those experiences of the ego just, you know, telling me I can't do this course is too hard to learn and blah blah blah, you know, you'll never make it.
Yeah.
And that it's very, you know, it really seems to be, you know, this backlash of the ego, and lesson 186 is all about how you know, really kind of, you can hear Jesus talking to Helen and Bill when they were complaining about that, and just saying, you know, you have the tools to learn this. You know, you have to accept my plan instead of the plan that you made. You've been given everything you need for this learning. And, you know, the end is sure. It's just a very reassuring lesson. And so, you know, I just kind of turned to it. It was perfect. So I thought I was going to teach that lesson. And then the night before I had to teach, this was a couple of weeks ago, I woke up really violently ill. You know, horrible stomach flu, horrible headache, neck ache, you know, chills, the whole nine yards. And pretty much had to, you know, I tried to reach in the morning, three other teachers, you know, to see if I could switch with them. And so I couldn't. I really felt like I wasn't sure at all that I could get through this, but I went to the center anyway. And I kind of was honest with people and, you know, just thought I'll do the best I can. And if I have to like go run out of here, you know, whatever. But what came up for me while I was sitting there waiting to start the class and feeling this horrible sickness and dizziness and, you know, couldn't even, I didn't even know if I could remember anything about the lesson. I realized that, you know, I had so much specialness caught up in my role as teacher and was feeling this personal responsibility for how things went, and that I would have to I'd have to let that go.
Yeah.
And so I did. I mean, I always try to resign as my own teacher, but this was a much deeper resigning than I've ever experienced. And so I told people that where I was at. I said, I'm not feeling well. I don't know if I'll make it through, but I'm going to do the best I can. And, you know, I had tried to reach other people, but I just started, and I felt the kindness of the people in the room. I can't really describe it any other way, and a real softness. And I started, I talked about the lesson and I went forward with it. And there was, you know, so there was a part of me that was, I don't really know what I said, but I was certain, I was conscious that there was a very certain voice that was teaching and, or not teaching, but, you know, joining. And I had asked to them all, you know, that we, as I always do, to join with our one inner teacher, because that's the only real teacher here. So it was this really experience of defenselessness, and because I was also conscious, like the pain and the, you know, the problems, the symptoms that I was having did not abate at all. But in fact, sometimes they seemed to get worse, but it didn't interfere with me going through with the teaching. And it was so much what we all needed to hear. And so there was this kind of, you know, I was conscious, you know, the body, my need for my body to do what I wanted it to do completely dropped away. And my vulnerability with that group of not being, you know, okay that day dropped away. So I can't really describe it as anything other than defenselessness, because I gave up my need for it to go anyway.
Uh-huh.
And I was totally okay with, you know what, if 10 minutes in, I have to run out of here, I'll do it. You know, that will be the way it is, and it'll have to be okay. And it was.
Yay.
And then I went home and went to bed.
Yeah. Good for you. Okay. So in about 1 or 2 minutes, do you want to describe where we can find those workshops that you're going to be teaching?
Sure. Well, you can go to my website, is the easiest place, which is foraysinforgiveness.com. And if you go to the classes and events page, there is information on the parent-child relationship, transcending guilt, blame, and need workshop that I'm teaching at the Rocky Mountain Miracle Center in Denver, February 21st. It's a Saturday, you know, morning and afternoon workshop. And there's information there on that. And then I, you know, if anyone here happens to be listening from the Portland, Oregon area or Seattle area, I'm also going to be offering the same workshop March 28th in Portland, Oregon. And there's information, you can click on that link and get information on that. If people are in Denver and they're interested in registering, though, the class is coming up on the 21st, and I'd appreciate it if they would contact me right away.
Okay, and that's Forays, Forays, in forgiveness.com. And I'll post that in the chat room, too. If you can get over to Facebook and take a look at that, you can just click on the link. But Susan, thank you so much for being here today. This was a great discussion, and as usual, it was timely. It's like what I needed to hear.
It always is, right?
Yes, it is.
Too, really, but
So thank you for the suggestion of this topic. And after you do your workshops, I very much would like to dedicate one of the shows to talking about the topics that you discuss with the parent-child relationship when you do those workshops.
Great.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you. And thanks to all the listeners for being here today and to everybody in the chat room who, you know, put their comments and questions there. And thanks to our producer, Scott Weaver. You can find me for readings, personal consultations, mentoring, and coaching on 1-2-listen.com. So just come on over there. And if you don't see me as available, you can always ask for a scheduled reading at a time that works for you. But right now, I hope that you will stay tuned for the rest of the great programming here on 1-2 Radio. If you're listening live on Friday mornings, then you've got about 5 minutes to get yourself another cup of coffee or tea and be back in time for the Through Line with Christine Demaurier, coming up next on Fabulous Fridays on 1-2 Radio. Until next week, relax and wear loose clothes. You've been listening to A Course in Miracles with C.A. Brooks and my guest, Susan Dugan, on 1-2 Radio, where we are changing the way you think about life and spirituality.